Ladies and gentlemen, I would love to introduce Melanie Littlejohn. Now, so I tried to find your exact title now because you got a long history with National Grid. So I really would like to just get a brief overview of that. So I'd rather you now give me your name, your title.
Sure.
But more so, I'd love to know where did your start begin at National Grid?
Sure.
So if you can do that. So where are you now? And then tell us a little bit about your start.
Okay. Today, my role is labeled the Vice President of Customer and Community Engagement for National Grid's New York State Territory, which includes Buffalo to Montauk and many places in between, about 27,000 square miles of territory. It goes to the Adirondacks, to the Canadian border, to the Pennsylvania border. It's massive, and I have been through every inch of it because it's about customer and it's about community engagement. And you don't do this stuff from behind your desk.
Right.
Right? If you're going to do it, you have to be out and present.
Right. I'm glad you said that. I'm going to come back to that because I think it's so important for our listeners who maybe manage people with similar roles for their companies and they've never done it before, and that expectation of like you're supposed to be in the office all day. Okay, so that's huge.
Yes.
All right. But you didn't start there. So when did you come into National Grid and what were you doing then?
I started National Grid 29 years ago. I don't know how 29 years happen in a blink of an eye, but there's a lesson there. A part of my journey that really helped shape me and shape me for the work I do today, international banking on Wall Street.
What?
Right. Don't ask. Right. It's just that's where I started.
Okay.
Right. I started there. I grew up in Queens. I went to school at Stony Brook out on Long Island. And I got a job in down in the Wall Street district. Before I moved up here for a man, right?
Right.
My husband's also from Queens, but Syracuse University was a wonderful magnet that brought us here, right?
Right.
So I left my career in international banking when I moved up here because it was a different marketplace. Our first place we lived in upstate New York was Rochester.
Okay.
And I couldn't find a job. So what I did, I actually pounded the pavement looking for a job. And I looked up one day, 177 North Clinton Avenue in Rochester, New York. I looked up and said, oh, there's the Urban League. I know they have employment division. Let me go put my resume in. Because my husband told me I had to work. We just got married. He's like, girl, you got to work. So I went and completed an application, what I thought was for them to push my resume out to area organizations because the league is world famous for their employment division. I got a call back that night from somebody at the league saying, hey, I have a job opening as a peer counselor for an education program geared towards students who are at risk. And by the way, all students are at risk, but that's a different podcast.
I agree.
Right? So I said, sure, let me come and check it out. The best job I've had in my life was working with young people who were open and a sponge and who life hadn't been real kind to in a really young age, but they were ready. They were open. And the amount of freedom that I experienced helping kids discover who they were and helping them shut out the noise. What? That job was amazing. It was amazing. So that's how I started my work on advocacy. And so I went from the Urban League. And then while I was at the Urban League, Bill Johnson, who was the mayor, who ultimately became the first Black mayor of Rochester for 10 years, I had the privilege to work for him when I was at the Urban League of Rochester. And I also learned about leadership and advocacy in a way that still sits with me. And I then moved here to do what? Work at the Urban League of Onondaga County. Yes, we did have an Urban League, a thriving. Fast forward, I then joined Niagara Mohawk.
Okay.
The legacy company.
Which is Niagara Mohawk, for the listeners, is?
The utility company, the gas and electric utility company in upstate New York.
Okay.
The largest in upstate New York. And started out as in doing this work, diversity. We didn't call it diversity, equity, and inclusion, but we called it diversity management. Because think about 29 years ago, you had to manage it.
Right, right.
Right? It was you had to manage, right? And I also had EEL compliance and testing under my remit. And then I grew through the organization, created the first framework for DEI 29 years ago.
Wow.
29 years ago. And by the time I moved to the next role in the company, I had connected with my colleagues. We had peer-to-peer training we created. We had touched 13,000 employees at that point. That was, again, 29 years ago. But it was powerful work then, and it's equally powerful now.
Right. It's so interesting. I hear you saying 29 years ago, 29 years ago. And to the rest of the world, I think diversity or DEI became a thing for them. The lead narrative of our nation when the issue with George Floyd happened. But I think it's important to recognize that this work in corporate America has been a thing for a very long time. It hasn't just started. Mm-mm. And so when I think about...
Same thing, different dress.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And you have to be obviously more innovative with it or creative mm-hmm. with it, because our society has evolved with technology, the way people learn and process information, et cetera. But again, it's important to understand and know that diversity, equity, and inclusion is not new. It's been around for a very long time. And when I think about social responsibility and corporate responsibility, look how long it took to really start to garner the attention of companies to say, okay, we have to do something. And I know that's another podcast too, because there's mm-hmm. a lot of...
There's a lot of unpacking
around that. However, it's here now, you mm-hmm. know, and I'm saying all of this, people, to truly understand how long change can take.
Change is a winding road.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We have George Floyd, this symbolic moment, this moment around issues of race, mm-hmm. racism, and hopefully we can eventually get to racial healing. It is one of the elements of DEI. DEI was founded on the issues around race,
mm-hmm.
then followed by gender, age, mm-hmm. national origin, sexual orientation, all of which is critically important, but race led the conversation or created the conversation.
You use the term racial healing. That's where I am now in my life mm-hmm. in all of this, right? I'm focused on the healing. I'm focused on even breaking old narratives, and everybody has a role. So what do you think about this? Like, everyone has a role that does this work. And when I say this work, I'm talking about anti-racism work or DEI work, whatever you want to call it. What are we actually fighting for? What does the end goal look like? You know, have you ever thought about that? Like, have you ever sat and when you're laying in your bed or just kick back and just thought about all the work you're doing, all the time and energy you put in over the last 20 years? Have you ever like, well, what is this for?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And here's where I come back to people who have been left out of conversations and discussions. They just want to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just want to walk in a grocery store or into a retail shop. I just want to shop. I don't want you to follow me. I don't want you to x-ray my license to make sure I am who I say I am. I want to go to work. I want to go live wherever I want to live. I want my house values not to be redlined.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking the universal us, right? I want to go to work and be seen as a contributor and valued for my brain.
Ooh.
and not looked at to check a box.
Yes.
Right? I want to go to the hospital and have my symptoms heard, listened to, and investigated before it's too late. I want my schools to have new books and resources that any other place has. I want my sons to come home alive. I don't want to worry about them when they walk out the door. Mm-hmm. You just want to be. I don't want to have to look at policies to see where the obvious holes are or fight on legislation to always reverse wrongs. Mm-hmm. Right? I want to be able to walk into a company, a business, and maybe see somebody that looks like me and not wonder if when I walk in the room, I will see anyone that looks like me. We just want to be.
Just want to be.
It is so simplistic mm-hmm. in terms of what we want, mm-hmm. right? And when I'm saying we, I'm talking about the time when you have been the other. And for me, as a Black female in corporate America, a Black female doing some of the work that I do, oftentimes I'm the other, mm-hmm. right? I have gotten used to being the other. But you never get used to some of the things that you have to go through when you are the other.
That part.
It's that part.
It's that part. And I find it so, I'm about to cry. Well, I feel like I am because there's a turning point, I believe, for all of us where we get tired and we need these moments that I'm having right now with you. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, the shift in mindset, the way people think, process information, that development that has to happen, without it, we can't get to be. You know, I remember sitting in a room with a group of people and I'm listening to them talk about a particular program and they're going back and forth and I'm just watching. You know, I'm not a part of this conversation. I'm just silent and just listening to both sides. And everyone honed in either where they were from. They use the term my a lot, my community, or, you know, my leadership. And I said to myself, these are seasoned people now and what they're doing. I wonder if they do any leadership reinforcement, if they do any self-development processes or work on themselves. If they understand that change is required and important, because these were some of the people that I had met when I first moved here in 2013. At this time, we're in 2019 and they're saying the same thing. And that was when I had my aha moment about maybe that's why we have the same results of poverty, the same results of what we're trying to fight for, because the people who are leading the charge aren't changing the way their outlook on what didn't work the first time.
Yeah.
You know, and so that shift of mindset and mentality and allowing yourself to evolve and grow about what you thought you knew was right. It was right for you at that time, maybe, and you maybe believed in your heart, but what if it's not? Well, getting individuals to get to that place, I found was like hard.
It's very hard, but that's why you're doing what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I keep getting back in the ring every day, because it's worth it.
Yes.
It's worth it to leave the world better than we found it. It's exhausting, and some days I don't feel like getting in the ring. Some days I just want to sit on the sideline. And every now and then, you know how you go back to your corner and you have to sit there, you know, and a fighter sits there in their corner and they have to count to 10. Before they get back in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we just have to count to 10.
Right.
And so sometimes that's that whole self-care stuff, which quite frankly, at most times I suck at.
I was going to ask you about that. So that's good. So you don't have.
I am committed to the idea. Now I need to just follow through on action.
Right. Okay.
Because what I am learning as I grow more mature is that you do need to count to 10.
You do need to count to 10.
Because you just can't keep up with this all of the time. So I step back and I count to 5, mm-hmm. but I need to count to 10. And so I'm learning how to add 6, 7, 8. And it's a lesson. And the problem is when you're so passionate about leaning in, change, and being present, mm-hmm. sometimes you give more than you probably should. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the universe directs you to where you need to be.
Yeah, when you're in tune and then you trust that inner guide, that inner voice, oh my God, life, like I say, your life is so much better for me now. You know, doing
you are
this.
Listening.
Because I'm listening. So this is it. Like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing right here. And it's worth it. I want people to know, no matter, guys, whatever it is that you are doing, whatever it is that you're doing, if you are doing what you're passionate about, if you're doing what you love, don't compare yourself to anyone who's also in the fight for goodwill and for humanity. Just trust and believe in what you are doing and stay the course. And when you do that, your stress is your stress, EU stress. It's not like stress like, oh, it's killing me and beating me down. Mm-hmm. It's a different type of stress. And so you have a different type of reaction in the way it is on your body. Just wanted to put that in there. We're going to do an episode on that. But health. It was so important into what you were saying, the health part, the self-care part, mm-hmm. and even leaders of your stature and your status and with the longevity that you've had. It's a proven point. Like everyone, we're all human. Everyone needs this.
Yep.
And to hear these conversations to get us started, you yep. know.
And when you become really in tune with, sometimes I just sit back and I smile. Every door that's closed. Mm-hmm. I am so thankful for these days because I didn't want that door to be a closed door. Then I found out why that door closed. And I'm like, well, thank you. You saved me from myself. Mm. And so that's being in tune with understanding the universe has plans for you. So just be open mm-hmm. to the twists and the turns. And if a door closed, it meant it wasn't supposed to open. And the lesson in why it didn't open or why it closed will show itself. But you got to be open to hear and learn the lessons. And I wasn't like that in my 20s. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't like that probably until my mid-30s. Until I started having those experiences where things around me, I'm like, well, why'd that happen? Well, why'd that happen? And at first having anger or sadness around something. And then sometimes months, sometimes years, sometimes weeks, things reveal itself. And then you go, wow. So it's like, just trust and be open. Mm-hmm. Trust and be open because the universe is going to give you what you need. Man, that door was supposed to close.
Yep, sure was. See?
Boom. Out. Done.
And then you'll see eventually it will show itself why.
And it becomes a gift.
Whoa.
Then it becomes that a one. Gift.
Yeah.
Then you go, thank you.
How did you get to a place where you're able to be so vulnerable and transparent and open as a leader, as a mother, as a wife, just overall though? How did you get to this place, you know, in being able to be vulnerable and transparent and open about your life when you're in spaces?
Because I know that, you know, sometimes when people see you, they see something else, right? And this is one of the exercises I used to do in diversity, talking about weave my cultural story by just looking at me. Tell me what you see and what you think when you see me walk in a room or see anyone. Walk in a room and you hear them speak. Tell me what you can think about what you think about me. And I used to do this exercise all the time with my classes. And people would tell me, you know, if I went to college, did I have both sets of parents, where I lived, how I grew up, da 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 da. They told me all of that by just what you can see or hear. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, they were more wrong than they were right. And so what I became in the process of helping people understand what happens when you make snap second decisions about people, I had to reveal who I was.
Yes.
Because you need to know who I am if you're going to work with me.
Yep.
If you're going to engage with me. Because the only way you can trust, respect, or value, or maybe none of the above, is know who I am. And then consequently, I can learn and know who you are by how you receive me. Mm-hmm. After I've been transparent, open, honest, and vulnerable. And so that's who I am. I am not your in-the-box corporate leader. I often get accused of caring too much for people. I said, well, that's okay. Because that's who I am. That's who I am. I guess I'm an empath.
Empath, yeah.
Sometimes that's hard. I feel everything, you know? But instead of me looking at it as a burden, I look at it as a gift.
That's being a good, sorry, I don't want to cut. I'm just,
no.
That's being a good leader. That's what leadership is all about. And it's not all the time, but good leaders are invested at some point and in some way in the people that they are leading and understand that they are also followers as well, sure. Mm-hmm. But I find that the people who I look to as my leaders, whether I'm working in a company or if I was working in an organization, or it was the ones that saw me and heard me that I respected and valued most. Because if you didn't, we were going to have a hard time. Mm-hmm. I was that employee. And I'm not proud to say that, because now that I've matured, I do recognize some of the things I could have done better, you know, after the fact. But when I think about leadership and the responsibility that you have, and people like yourself in your position, that accountability factor is so important, regardless of who this employee is and what level they're at, that, you know, you're thinking about them.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's just caring about and being in service to others is what I learned from my parents.
Let's go into that real quick.
Yeah.
Because I want to talk about that. Your parents, wow, how amazing.
They were show enough.
They were show enough. So yeah. I know people are like, well, what about her parents? Okay, so I'll let you tell a little bit of it, but your parents were also foster care parents
parents. I have 24 sisters and one biological brother. I am the oldest. My mother gained her angel wings about 10 years ago, but left a legacy of love. And sit up with your back straight and never forget who you are. Don't ever let anybody take you down from who you know you are. So she's left that not only in me, but my brother and my 24 sisters. And my dad, you know, he's the protector. He was my first love, right? He showed me what I should expect in a mate and how a mate treats me. Yeah. And I am blessed to have a husband who does that.
Right.
Right. And my dad is still alive and having that presence in my life, you know? He's still, I call him like a guardian angel, you know. I'm on the train coming back from Manhattan this morning, and so I'm in Penn Station at 6:30 this morning. He's like, well, girl, you need to stay on the phone with me till you get on the train.
Still.
I'm like, Dad, Dad, I'm good. I know you good, but you're going to stay on the phone, you know. So that kind of love from him And I'm blessed to have that in my husband as well, that kind of unconditional, protecting, mm-hmm. valuing, respecting mm-hmm. love.
Yeah.
So that I'm extraordinarily blessed by. But my parents taught me service, right? Taught me service. They lived it. They didn't talk about it.
They did it.
They just did it. My grandparents just did it.
I think with people from that generation anyway, it's a natural part of who they are.
You take care of mm-hmm. your nieces, your nephews, yes, your aunties.
That culture was there, uncle. For sure.
It didn't matter. Somebody who's, you brought them in, right? Mm-hmm. I call it the Sunday pot of beans kind of love. My grandmother used to say, I always keep a big old pot of beans on the stove because you never know who might need a little bit of food and a little bit of love. So she would, on Sundays, it's a gigantuan pot of pinto beans mm. and cornbread mm. on the stove. But that was love, that was service, that was community. But that's just what I thought folk did.
Right.
So that's how I grew up.
Yeah. You grew up in love. Literally in love.
Right. And we didn't have much.
Right.
But we didn't know we didn't have much. You know, my father would always say, well, we're not poor. We just don't have a lot of money. Because there's a mindset of lack mm-hmm. that he never wanted any of us to have. You don't lack.
That's right.
You may not have everything, but you don't lack.
When you gonna write this book, Mel?
Girl,
come on! I need you to get this book going.
I have all of these different sayings that I've learned and had from my grandparents, my aunts, my uncles, people, wise people that I've met, and some of these sayings. And you hear when I speak, I always have some profound statement
you
or
do.
Saying that someone has said to me or I've read that touched my spirit mm-hmm. and created a lesson. And, you know, like the Sunday pot of beans.
The Sunday pot? When you were saying, that's the title of
I got a book in me.
You got a book.
I got a couple of books. It's ready. Probably.
Yeah, you got a series. It's like ready to come out,
It's ready to come.
I know it's tugging at
it's
you.
It's tugging.
I know it's tugging. You got to feel it.
It's tugging.
Put it on Audible. Oh, my God. That'd be incredible.
There it is.
There it is.
Sunday pot of beans, Audible.
Audible.
And I'm going to read it myself.
Yes, and let you be the narrator because your voice.
I'm going to do it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Yes, this is it.
This is it. Sunday pot of beans.
This is it, and this is what it's about. Melanie Littlejohn just sat here and opened up and shared with us just a inkling of an insight because there's just so much to this incredible woman. And, you know, I'm just so grateful that you have entrusted me mm-hmm. with your time. And you showed up. You came through.
Mm-hmm. I told you I would. If I tell you, I'm going to do it.
You're going to do it.
It may not be as quickly as you
right,
but I will always do it because I said it.
Because you said you would. You followed through.
I followed through.
I feel so blessed today. I was in a serious funk.
See, the universe.
You just spunk my life up again. You just ignited my fire again. But we'll talk about that after this is over. You know, guys, this is the Real Deal Hill, Lakia Hill with Rising CNY. You know what it is. This is what we're doing. We're bringing you nothing but the truth and all the insight, the information, just for you to get to know people, get to know who's behind the scenes doing things for us to make sure that we have what we need. So I appreciate you guys for tuning in and listening and taking the time. So you guys have a blessed day as well. And bye-bye.